What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Media 1099 podcast with your hosts, Robert Husky and Michael Durr. We're going to be talking freelancing strategy for content creators and entrepreneurs. Today's topic is one of my absolute favorite subjects, and that is the issue of time management strategy. We've got a couple sponsor ads coming up. Thanks again for tuning in, everyone. Hang tight, and we'll be back right after the break. Okay, welcome back, Media 1099 listeners. Thank you for joining us. Robert, how are you, man?
Good. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing pretty well. So today's topic is time management, right? And it's probably not sexy to anyone, but I think it might be more topical than ever to kind of discuss this because the quarantine has provided a lot of individuals more time away from work and socializing. So I'm not going to use the term free time because for a lot of us, like the losses that we're facing actually is like pretty significant, and it's like we're paying a heavy price tag for this at a time. So I don't want to use the word free time. That's kind of insensitive. But that being said, I'm always want to seek out like these, you know, opportunities in the situations that are somewhat difficult. We have a little bit more time now to use to however we want to allocate it. As someone who's been self-employed for several years now, one of the biggest transitions for myself was how do I become productive with more time, with no policing over my shoulder. So I'll kick this off to you. Has this added time been difficult for you to optimize your productiveness? And if so, in what ways?
Oh yeah, 100%. Like, so we're recording this, it's like the first week of April. So depending on where you are in the States, you've been in lockdown for like a month or maybe a couple weeks. So yeah, it's starting to, I feel like today I've definitely felt the like cabin fever kind of thing of it. But for me, I've struggled because I realized like I'm a very routine person. And in this environment where like I don't have things that I need to get done, quote unquote, like I don't have a job I need to go to. I don't have the editing I need to do. It's like too much free time. I really struggle with that. So I've found it very difficult for myself to carve out like, okay, this is my routine. This is how I'm going to stick with it. Especially beforehand, I was really like, okay, got to wake up, boom, hit the gym, and then come back and like, I'd start my work day. I can't go to the gym anymore, you know? I've slipped up on like working out from home. Like for whatever reason, it's hard for me to just like, all right, go out to the garage and like get some work in. I feel like there's something about going someplace. So yeah, for me, like the first couple of weeks were kind of hard. I've gotten a little bit better. As of right now, I feel like I've gotten like a decent routine, but it's still tough. Like I constantly have to check myself. How's this been kind of shaping up for you so far?
Similarly, I mean, everything is compromised to some degree. You can't really go to the gym. You can't go out to the park. You can't go to the bench or to the beach to do that stuff. Not as well. It's just harder to do the things that you normally would do, like the external like opportunities. Internally now, like you have more opportunities to do other things that you want to, but externally, like those resources are a little bit more scarce. And I think that provides different challenges. So finding ways to spend your days like with, you know, not only another person, let's say you and I live with significant others. So that provides a different disruption because you also want to spend that time with those people and you're balancing the ecosystem of your house. Yep. So you can't just take over like one room and say, okay, well, I'm going to use this and that's going to be my time for X amount of hours. Now you probably can if you kind of arrange it that way. But I think it's just kind of this balancing act, this dance, because it's even for someone like myself who has not that much of an overall disruption into my work life and my balancing, because the early springtime is kind of my quieter time. Now, I've had a couple engagements compromised event-wise. But overall, my heavy stuff is towards summer, fall. So it hasn't really impacted it quite yet. That being said, just because I have another person in the house all the time, it's a welcome disruption, but it's just different. And now we have to kind of balance that out.
Yeah, I want to jump in on that. Like, I'm a really big proponent of like flow state and just kind of like, it takes me a long time to get into what I'm doing. Like, you know, it's like a diesel engine. Like you just got to kind of like let it sit and then it gets going. And yeah, like, Blanca like shares a space with me. So there's sometimes like interruptions that are just like, oh, like I was into something and it's hard for me to get back into that. And like, it's just another one of those things that we're currently like adjusting to is because, you know, before like she'd be working at her like 9 to 5 and now she's working from home and it's just like, oh, I'm eating at different times. I'm doing this kind of stuff. And she's like, oh, like, cool. Yeah. You have to work that balance, you know?
Yeah, and if you even just did something like as casual as reading a book for an hour, all of a sudden there's casual conversation that just kind of come like pops up.
Yep.
And so you address that because you're not going to be a douche and just be like, oh no, just leave me alone. You're going to answer those questions. You're going to like talk and like kind of just right off the top of your head. So it all becomes like, it's just disruptive. It's just your normal standards have just changed slightly. And yeah, I mean, I think it's challenging for everybody. I mean, especially like, this is what makes it so interesting to me. Like time management strategy is really not something that people think a whole lot about when they have no time. It's just like, I just either have time or I don't have time. Simple as that. Like my job's too demanding. When I get home, the personal life is too demanding. You know, I got too many cooks in the kitchen. I've got kids. I've got whatever. I got a high stress job. You just don't have the time. So you don't really think about it. But when you do have the time, when you have this surplus of time now, to me, that's when I really started to think about strategies and tactics and like, what can I do to even manufacture more of it or to carve out areas where I'm going to be productive to some degree and also still like live life like a normal human being. So I think it's really fascinating. I think it's really interesting for a lot of people to now be given this opportunity. And I guess, of course, trying to be as sensitive as possible, people are losing a lot of income, losing jobs. That's always tough. The silver lining, of course, without being a dick about it, is that like you have an opportunity now to work on things that maybe you hadn't before or focus on some new venture.
I definitely think that concept of like, oh, I have no free time, you know, a lot of times it's like, because everybody only has 24 hours a day and you should be sleeping like 8 of those hours if like an ideal lifestyle. So everyone's limited to like those 16 hours or so. Mm-hmm. And yeah, right now it's like those 16 hours are free. Like it's empty space. We can't leave our homes. So for me, that tends to kind of just slip of like, oh, okay. Like I don't have to hop on this right now. You know, I could do what's another half an hour on YouTube. It's another 20 minutes. The next thing I know it's like midday and I've accomplished nothing, you know? So to keep myself accountable, I have like this day/week calendar, that I've been using, and like, I'm a big proponent of like the 4-color pen, you know, I've been talking about that all the time, but I'll use it to mark down like, okay, for me, YouTube wasted internet time is like in red, and I will start and I will write it down like when I start surfing YouTube. So it's like, all right, it's 8:00, boom. And you write it down when you start, because it's always easy to go back and just be like, yeah, it was really like 8:30 when I started doing that, you know, and then you like, you lie to yourself, you know, and then like work time is in black ink because, you know, like that stuff has to get done. So it's like, boom, when I start doing physical archiving for like Cal State LA right now, it's like, boom, that started at 8:30. And then next thing I know, it's like, boom, it's lunch. All right, everyone has to eat. So that's like in green because you have to have some relax time, you know, and like, that's like a positive relax. So for me, like I've been using that. And when it clicks, like I don't do it as often as I'd like to do, but when I'm doing it, man, it's nice to be able to look back at the week and see like, oh, where are my wasted time hours? Where are my wasted time?
Yeah.
And me being a visual person, it kind of breaks it up in that color coordination, because otherwise like it's all just black and you're like, oh, just I brush over it.
So to reiterate, you did your work was in black ink. Mm-hmm. Your wasted time was in red ink.
Yep.
Your green was your breaks?
Yeah, a mixture of like breaks and lunch. So like,
okay. What like was your blue?
Blue would be research research and development / reading.
Gotcha.
For me. Because that's kind of like, you got to do that. And especially right now, you should see my charts. It's like, it's all blue because I've just been
I'm interested,
doing nothing but reading.
Oh, that's awesome. So is there a specific time that you say, okay, did you have like a goal of like, okay, I'm going to mark it percentage wise. So like wasted time can only be 20%. Green break can only be like 10%. Like, did you have anything specific going into this, or do you just kind of monitor it and then chart it and then retroactively kind of look back on and say, okay, this is what I did for this past week?
Yeah, I think like the first couple of weeks, it was just like, let's just see where I'm at, you know, because like you think you know, but then you don't, you know, and you start realizing that like an hour lunch turns into a 2-hour lunch and kind of like, where's that gray area of transition?
Yeah.
So then the first couple of weeks, like it was just like, okay, like I'm just going to see where I'm at. I'm not going to really try to change my schedule too much. And then you become conscious of it because then you're like, you bust out the red pen and you're like, oh man, my mornings just get wasted. Like I'll wake up and the next thing I know, it's like 2 hours of mindless surfing or looking at the stock market or not being productive. And then, so you're just like, okay, like, cool. How do I curve that? You know, like this is too much. And then you realize if I just don't turn on my computer for like that first 30 minutes, you know, if I read or just meditate or whatever, like, boom, I save myself an hour and a half. And then I've started to slowly like make little graphs and like the weekly plan of like, okay, like I want to improve this. I want to do that. Because I think if you put it beforehand, like if you're like, okay, I only want to put X amount of time, like when you first start doing this, like you're setting up false hope and it's like, it's not accomplished. Like just see what you're doing organically. And then you'll be like, oh, okay. Like maybe I'm not reading enough or putting enough into my research and development, or maybe like, wow, I'm working these like for 5 hours at a time and not giving myself a break. Like how productive am I?
You know? What I like about this is that you're basically forcing people to collect data first before you set up goals.
Yeah.
Right. Which is, I think, important because like a lot of times, like, and the reason I asked that question was like, oh, did you set up like, okay, well, I can only spend 2 hours a day on, you know, wasted time and like so forth. But if you just collect the data, just raw data for a certain amount of time, 1 week, 2 weeks, you know, I mean, now you have, and it would take some self-analysis here to kind of, actualize where you actually spend your time, which is the hardest thing to do. This is just called the time audit. And if you really break down how long it takes for you to do your bathroom duties in the morning, like, you know, you shower, you clean up, you brush your teeth, you know, how long it takes for you to like eat your breakfast and all that, you know, how long it takes for you to do your workout, how long it takes you to do other things. And normally in normal conditions, you would also do this for how long it takes you to pick out your wardrobe for work and then get to work. And you'd kind of do this breakdown of how much time you spend on the average day for what. And in this, we don't have those travel times, right? You just have kind of normal life stuff. Mm-hmm. But you're collecting that raw data, which I think is really important because now you can assess accurately, this is exactly how much time I kill doing this. Like, I don't know the last time you've done this. I just did this today. Have you looked up the data on your Instagram and see how much time you spend on Instagram?
No, I have not.
You should do it.
Okay. I'm kind of scared.
All you got to do for anybody that wants to do it, out of curiosity, I'm not going to shame anybody, but you go to your profile and you tap on settings and you tap on your activity and it's going to tell you. So mine was 27 minutes on average. And I know that it'll change week to week. So you can have weeks where you're just like going on it crazy. Like I think when we were at Sports Shooter and I was running the social for that, I was probably on that significantly more. This past week, significantly less. But you can identify very accurately because if you just asked somebody, how much time do you spend on Instagram? They may tell you one thing, but then the data is going to say something completely different.
Yeah.
So it's being very realistic of like, oh shit, I spend 3.5 hours a day on Instagram. And if that's the case, you have an idea of like, well, what if I just cut that down to 2.5? Now I've manufactured one extra hour a day for something else that I've always used to said, oh, I don't have time for that. So I like your strategy because and the whole thing about this is like, you know, we're going to talk about some of our strategies and what has worked, maybe what hasn't. They are not necessarily one size blueprints for everybody. I think the key thing is you kind of search for something that works for you and you might find better productiveness in your actual task taking.
Yeah. And kind of two little things I want to hit on is when you switch from tasks, like make sure you write it down. Like even if it's at like, okay, I started this at 6:10, because the tendency is like you'll forget of when you really started and you'll give yourself the benefit of the doubt. But also by looking at the data, like before this whole quarantine lockdown thing, I realized like I spent a lot of time driving to work or driving to gigs and I was like, oh man, this is kind of like wasted quote unquote work time. Like how can I improve on this? And I started listening to productive podcasts, you know, like, okay, cool. Like now I could listen to a business podcast while I'm sitting in traffic for half an hour at, you know, double the speed. And it's just like, instead of wasted time just sitting there thinking about nothing, I'm gaining some advantage from that.
Yeah. I love that method. First of all, if anybody is driving around listening to our podcast, we thank you for that. And if that's part of your normal kind of weekly activity, we appreciate that. I love listening to, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but I listen to audiobooks. And I love speeding things up. And I actually do this for YouTube too. So if I'm watching YouTube videos, tutorials, I try to consume stuff. Unless it's really difficult for me to comprehend, then I'll slow it down to the normal speed and I'll replay it. But for the most part, I'm playing things at about 1.5 to 2 times the speed. Mm-hmm. And that just allows, I don't know, one, it just kind of gets me in this state of energy, right? Like you're just consuming more, your mind is working faster. And you may not be able to start that off right off the bat. Like for me, going to 2x speed on any content was ridiculous to begin with, but now it's kind of easier. So, but I think it gets you into this state of frenetic energy, as well as you can consume more and you can just get your tasks done faster. I can do laundry. I can clean the dishes. I can, like, you realize how much time you might actually spend cleaning my kitchen counter, like before I start cooking. Mm-hmm. And it may be an hour amount of time for me to clean the kitchen, clean the dishes, and then cook the meal before I start to eat it. So in that hour, I could have killed off an hour of an audiobook or a podcast, and at 1.5 speed or 2 times speed, you can kill off significantly more. So it's definitely a great way for to add, you know, productiveness to your normal daily routines.
Yeah, I've recently started doing that with, especially with like YouTube content. I feel like 2 times speed is where it's at, especially even with podcast too. But, and now when like I'll listen to stuff at like 1 time or normal speed, it seems very slow.
Right. Yeah.
Have you noticed, like, let's say you're listening to podcasts at 2 times speed or watching YouTube videos, like when you come out of that to go and do something in the real world, do you feel like things are moving slow or your brain's kind of moving fast? Like
I think that's kind of the point that I'm making, is like it energizes me. Like I'm training my brain to think faster, mm-hmm. and absorb information faster. And so there are certain things, like I said before, I will not be able to do that with, you know, if I'm going to watch something on tax codes and listen to that content with a lot of scenarios with numbers, I'm not going to listen to that 2 times speed. And if I am, I'm probably going to end up replaying it. So that I will be a little bit more diligent with. I'll listen to it at slower speeds. But for the most part, everything else, yeah, like I love, other than music, because that sounds horrible at 2 times speed. But everything else is at a faster speed. And I do feel that sense of like afterwards, just feeling I'm faster and like the world is kind of slowed down a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird kind of mix that I've jumped into. And then kind of on that YouTube field of things, one of my goals, you know, for this upcoming quarter is to work on learning Spanish. So I've taken the opportunity to turn my escapism of like watching Netflix and, you know, kind of that stuff that I do when I'm eating lunch or cleaning the dishes. And I put it either in Spanish with English subtitles on it or in... listen to it in Spanish with English subtitles. I'm not sure if I mixed that up, but I'm trying to use that time of my escapism to learn more Spanish. I'm also taking my Duolingo classes like on the daily, you know, that's like 10, 15 minutes. That kind of helps fill my day and start it. But I've learned that like one, when people speak Spanish, like it, to me, it just seems like it's being spoken at 2 times speed. So it seems very,
that's true. Yeah.
Very fast. And at that same time, you're trying to absorb what they're saying and then translate it into English. And then by the time my brain's doing that, I feel like I've missed half of what they're saying.
Yeah.
So listening to just people in Netflix shows, Community or whatever, like in Spanish has really helped me slow that down. So I feel like I could absorb things a little bit better.
Yeah. No, I think if you're trying to pick up a language, I wouldn't do it at 2x speed.
Oh, that's impossible. No, that's impossible.
I would be like, oh no, like maybe half a speed, you know, just to try to really hear and sound everything out. But that's a good idea. How do you feel like you're progressing with that Spanish? Is it just, you just started this?
Yeah, I mean, I started like a while back ago, maybe like last year. I got like really into Duolingo, and then it kind of, work kind of took over, and I got out of that rhythm of it. And now that like I'm back into this free time principle, quote unquote, where like I really struggle with that. So I've been trying to find things to fill my time. Like I do better when I have limited amount of time in my head. So I've gotten back onto that train the last like week. And I think it's really good. Like I've watched Earth at Night on Netflix in Spanish, and that's really nice because the audio is slow. Like there's not a lot of commentary going back, mm-hmm. back and forth. Plus the visuals in that, just if you haven't watched it, is amazing. You could be a tech geek and just camera gear and is great. And I think it's really helped, you know, it's just one of those ways that you could turn wasted time into somewhat productive time, you know? And I think that's kind of what we have to work on, you know, because everyone's going to watch Netflix or YouTube or whatever your escapism is, you know, and like it's necessary as a human, like you need relaxing time in this kind of weird place that we're in. So if you could kind of adjust yourself to have some benefit from that, I think it's really beneficial.
Yeah. I love what you, you know, are basically doing with you're auditing your time. You're figuring out what you spend your time on. So I would recommend that to anybody. And if you can't do it for like 2 weeks straight of like kind of monitoring what you do, because it's tough, you know, get as accurately as you can, do it for a day or two, and then you'll be able to see, like, you know, like I said, going to go to Instagram, see what you spend time on that platform, and it will tell you the honest truth. So if you can identify your time wasters, I think that's a huge step. Because anybody that says, oh, well, I need an extra hour, I need, if only I had this much time, you can manufacture that. I'm not saying you can manufacture 10 hours, but you can manufacture an hour very simply by minimizing certain areas that are wasting time.
Yeah, it's like when people say they don't have time, it's like, no, you just choose what you have time exactly. for, what you don't have time for.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And I think there are tons of little areas there. Like, you know, one thing that I like to do is, you know, I'm not a full minimalist or anything like that, but I do like to live that kind of style of life where, whether it's the wardrobes that I have, the food that I keep in my kitchen, or the documents that I have on file, you know, and to organize, the more stuff of that I have, the more time it ends up taking. Now, we're currently in a quarantine, but imagine if I weren't and I had a 9-to-5 job and I had an extensive wardrobe and so many different recipes in the kitchen to make something for food. Like this would just take longer mm-hmm. for me to set these things up. You know, for people that get dressed in the morning and it takes them a long time, I'm not saying don't do that. I'm not saying don't take pride in how you look, but understand where certain areas are that might be time killers for you. So if you spend 2 hours of your time getting ready for work, not even traveling to work, just getting ready to travel to work, then think about how you can maybe knock that down for an hour. And now you've got an hour at the end of your day of like, okay, well, I could have used that time for something else. I could have woken up that extra hour early. And instead of getting ready for that amount of time, I could have meditated. I could have read a book or read some of them, something. And, yeah. You know, those are areas that I like to do is just to kind of minimalize as much as I can. Like, you know, having a complete drawer, this is a great time for spring cleaning. If anybody's going through that process, you don't need a lot of files, like hard copy files on hand. Like I Marie Kondo'd that shit. And I was just like, listen, I don't need half of this stuff. And so everything I have is on digital and it's backed up or whatever. There's a lot of just junk in there. So you can kind of minimalize what's just in your current office. And I think that's a really great way to, that's more managing space, I'd say, but it also helps with regard to time.
Yeah. And to add on to that, right now I'm looking at my desktop and it's just cluttered with like screenshots of books I want to read and just weird files. And to me, like it's visually draining to see that, you know, and like it goes back to having to choose between a huge wardrobe. It's like, if you only have like 10 things you're going to wear, you don't waste that energy in the morning of choosing like, oh, is my red shirt going to go with these pants or whatever? Like just, no, it's like, okay, cool. I got me, like I have like 10 black shirts, you know, and it's like, okay, it's just, this one's clean. We're going to use this one, you know? And so like finding little things like that where, yeah, I need to clean out my desktop because every time I look at it, like, it's just like a punch in the face and kind of draining to me visually. And that mm-hmm. doesn't, like, it doesn't make me want to keep it clean. Like, but once it is clean and you have like nothing but your hard drives in like the right corner and like a couple files in the left, it's like, oh, this is so nice. All right. I feel so much more productive. Let's get to work.
Exactly. Now I wanted to ask you, because we're in this quarantine time, like, and I hope everybody asks themselves this question as well. Like, what do you want to get out of this quarantine time? Well, like define what successful use of your time would look like when it's all said and done. Is there a specific goal? Like you talked about is give me one thing that we haven't mentioned. Like you already talked about Spanish. Like obviously if this lasts for 2 months, being fluent in Spanish would be a great goal. But like, give me something else that we haven't talked about. Is there anything that you haven't mentioned?
Yeah. I mean, I think like for me, okay, my stretch goal, right, is I want to finish all the books I haven't read in my bookshelf. Mm. And like, because I've carved out 3 books already so far in this, and it's just been like, it feels great slowly seeing like that shelf of books go down, because I really, like I said, I like made that pledge of I don't want to buy new books till I finish what I have reading. And they're all like American history, kind of military style stuff, because that's what I was like into in college. And like, I think it's very valuable to know about sacrifices and where you came from to like understand who you are. But I want to like just branch out into like other things. So for me, like that's my stretch goal. So like any free time is like, I'm just trying to read, power through it. And it's tough. Like some of the stuff is a little dry sometimes, and then I've also realized that like, okay, after an hour and a half of reading, like I just need a break. I'll play like some Snake on my phone or something just to give me like a mental break, because otherwise I don't remember what I just read a page ago, you know, and then like, that's a waste of time. You know,
so no, like, absolutely. If you have a goal of killing off 3 books and you're, you know, on hour 2 and it's like all of a sudden you don't recall what you've read the last like, you know, 45 minutes. Yeah, it's totally, you know, you want to be optimal in that area. And I totally understand, like, but that's a great goal. Like, you know, if anybody has book reading as a goal during this time instead of, you know, Netflixing and YouTubing, it's a great option. And like I said, if you kind of increase the speed on that, you can do it even faster and feel a little bit more accomplished. Feel like, I think the reason why these goal settings during this time is important is because like, I want people to realize like there is this silver lining. There's this opportunity during this time to, like I said, I'm not going to insult you by saying it's a free time that you're getting. It's very costly. We're paying a price for it. But that being said, if you have the time that you always said, I just wish I had more time, what did you want to do with that time? And how can we achieve it? Now, I'm not saying you can necessarily become fluent in the language that you wanted to become fluent in, but, you know, like killing off one book, that's an attainable goal. Even if things go back to normal in 2 weeks, like you can do that. So, but it starts off with just something of like, what do I want to get out of this time frame? You know, what do I want? What would define what success would look like, and define what would be an accomplishment for you during this time frame? I think that's a really good goal.
Yeah. And also to kind of jump on that is like making, like that's a stretch goal, right? So it's like, it's semi-abstract, even though like I can physically see the book like go from one part of my bookshelf to another. But a lot of times, like at the start of this is like, okay, I'm going to archive my whole past work from everything since like I started shooting like in high school, college to like now. Like that's such a broad goal that on a day-to-day basis, like it's not attainable. But if you start the day, I'm like, okay, like I am going to archive 1 week's worth of shooting today. Like, and it's like, boom, cool. I had 5 shoots or whatever, you know, or maybe it's like 2 weeks. And you're like, boom, I could check that off. Like if I write that down and boom, I could check that off. Like that's attainable. And it's a small little brick in the wall of your whole archiving, where if you step back and like, oh man, I have hundreds or thousands of assignments. Like there's no way I'm going to get to this. Like, no, just start with one brick and like finish it and make this little bite attainable. And then boom, next thing you know, like 4 days in a row, oh man, I've gone through like a month of my work, and like it wasn't that difficult, you know. And then you see that progress. But if you just go and like, yeah, set a blanket statement like I want to do my whole archive, you know, like it's really easy to like, yeah, this quarantine, we're in lockdown till at least May, you know, like so I got plenty of days left in the future. I'll go chill in Netflix for a little bit. You know, like I think setting very specific micro goals is also like very, very important.
Okay, so this kind of reminds me of this quote, and I keep going back to it, that James Patrick from our early, I think January interview told us, which is that anything that can be measured can be improved upon. So I keep thinking about that, and I was never one of those, you know, kind of personalities to jot down specific goals. I always thought like, well, it's, you know, it's too specific. It's not, I would abstractly say, well, I just want to read more, instead of saying like, well, how about you put down a specific goal? Like, 100 pages in the next week. Can you do that? And like those goals, then you can start to improve on. And so I started doing that with our goal setting earlier when I talked about like, well, I wanted to kill off, you know, X amount of books. So I'm going to put down a number and kind of shoot for that. I'm going to say, I'm going to try to work out this many times. I'm going to try to do this many walks. You know, those are specific goals that I think are really helpful for people to jot down. And if you can measure on it, you can improve on it.
Yeah. To anyone that hasn't listened to that interview, like go listen to this like right after we finish up this one, because that conversation, even though there's some audio issues, that conversation was so insightful to me because I hadn't thought about, yeah, like you said, like anything that you can measure, you can improve on. Like I hadn't thought of things in that perspective, and he had a lot of insight because his part of what he does is constantly setting goals and helping people manage business. So he deals with it on a day-to-day basis. Also, not just for himself, but he has the ability to see other people and advise them. So it gives him a better base to kind of pull information from and see what really works. That interview was great.
Mm-hmm. Another area I want to like suggest for people is just to pick up Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, and or just listen to Tim Ferriss or anything along those lines. He'll obviously at some point start talking about time management strategy. And one of them that I wanted to bring up is the 80-20 principle. It's the Pareto rule. And Ferriss urges that we find 20% of the work that draws 80% of our productivity, and then we leave the rest. So to put it in simpler words, 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your customers. And in my opinion, to put it in even simpler words with no numbers, you want to search for low effort, high reward. That's what you need to identify. So this is not so much something that is just now highlighted because of the quarantine, but it's more because of now that you have this time, start strategizing your business career. And if this helps, and I'm not trying to be elitist here, I'm just saying like when you get out of this quarantine, you may just have to end up taking jobs that you have to take. But that being said, going forward, think about the kind of clients that you want to search for. And I would say try to find the work that is going to have the highest payout with the least amount of effort. So I don't normally waste my time on a lot of small clients in general, but I definitely don't kick the tires on small clients with high workloads. Like that to me is like the, because now we're looking at, you know, increasing your profits. You're trying to find, so it, to me, it's more of a, it's urging people to think about, you know, finding those clients where you can put in not so much like the least amount of work, but you know, the highest reward and the lowest effort. If you can find anything like that, I would cultivate that relationship first and foremost over all the other small time clients. You know, that's the 20% of the work that you really want to focus on. And or just duplicate the system or the model or the relationships and build that elsewhere if you can. So to me, that's actually something that I try to do. Like 80% of my income is through 20% of my client base or 30% or something like that. Yeah. It's not spread out as much. So to me, I spend a lot more time cultivating that relationship and trying to find duplicate relationships like that. And no, I think it's something to consider.
No, I think it's good for people to take a step back and really analyze their numbers or their income numbers and like realize that that's probably true. Cause like, I'm thinking about that right now. It's like the stuff, you know, I necessarily do more often isn't the highest paying stuff, but my clients recently that have been growing because I realized like these are higher paying clients or less needy or less sporadic. I have been putting more time towards, and it's like, okay, like the switch doesn't happen overnight. Like you can't change course. If you're like a ship, you know, you gotta curve a little bit. But just realizing like, oh yeah, I guess more of my time is going towards things that I don't have the reward that they should, where you're minimizing the possibility of like, of adding that time of manufacturing time to clients that will pay you more or have more opportunity for growth, like is really important. And in this time, take a deep dive into your numbers, you know, and just see where the money's coming into, see where it's going out. Because it's one thing to always like look at the bottom line you know, at the end of the month. But if you start looking at the details and seeing where, you know, you might have some leaks in your expenses, or you might have some stuff coming in that you're like, oh, wow, if I could double this client, or I could find another client, like you said, a mirror client or similar client, like this could really help push up my income without pushing more time.
So I think yeah, really and even if it's not financial profit that you're trying to expand, we're always trying to expand that. It's just the time itself. Think of like time as money. Like, so if you can spend less time on something and get the higher reward, like that's kind of, those are the goals that you want to search for. And obviously people are going to say, well, of course, yeah, I'm trying to do that. I'm just saying, like, you know, think proactively during this time as well as when you get out of this, and seek out, like, don't, you know, seek out clients that may be slightly different. And now you're starting to really optimize your time now, because you're spending less time, but you're making more money, and you can reinvest that time to however you want to. So you can build that new skill set that you always wanted to, or do whatever. I'm just saying, like, it's just something to consider as we start to talk about time management strategies. To me, pricing kind of went into a lot of that in the last couple of years as I started to really figure out, like, well, how am I working like half the amount of time, half the amount of hours that I used to when I was working, you know, just so much, but I'm making more money. Like, and I was like, okay, obviously I wanted to get to this point, but it kind of happened accidentally. But then it was like trying to figure out, like, how can I duplicate that? How can I keep doing this? And that was simply just a decision on, like, focus on the relationships that are conducive for that and ignore everything else. So I kick to the curb all the other clients that are, like, not worth my time. Now, it requires a little bit of discipline in that sense, but, like, you know, you just figure out, like, okay, well, because I've made up the ground on this side, I don't need to do this job because it's asking me to do a lot for very little. So, like, how busy do I want to feel, you know, just to do busy work? Like, is that important to me? And if it is important to you, then great. Like, you know, do what you got to do. But just something that I like to encourage people to think about, that, and that is a way of manufacturing time, is through your pricing.
It's funny that you mentioned, like, the need for busy work, because I feel like I've already said this like three times, but when I have too much free time, I struggle being proactive with the time that I have. So I found this link, we'll put it in the show notes, of, like, it was these quote unquote Ivy League classes that are for free. You could pay like $45 if you want a certificate. I've just been auditing these classes, but I took a microeconomics class, and it's like, I haven't, like, why would I do that? You know, like, I'm a photographer. But it's like, you know, I haven't done something in, like, that side of the world of things, or learned since, like, high school or college, you know? So it's been like a long break, and they're talking about, like, supply curve and, like, you know, if you up the price, like, are you more people going to buy, or are you going to be able to supply more things? And, like, what's the cost basis? And when I was listening to these videos, like, I was like, oh man, like, it's so true. Like, if I increase my price, right, and let's just say doing sports, like, is the demand for that going to go down? And it's like, yes, because there's so many people willing to shoot sports photography for cheap. Right. So it's like, oh, that I can't really up my price. Like, there's a ceiling there at a certain point. And it's like, oh man, like, all these little things were just clicking in my head. And I was like, wow, this was a really productive, quote unquote, like, 5-week class that I busted through in like a week and a half. And it really just helped me, quote unquote, put busy time into my schedule of,
yeah,
oh great, I only have, like, I have one less hour, you know, every day, or hour and a half. And I was like, but I've become so much more productive because, like, yeah, all right, instead of surfing YouTube at 8 o'clock, it's like, let me just have my coffee. I'll take my class for the day, a couple classes. And I have this other one that's on persuasive writing that just opened up that you guys could probably go into, because that was once again one of my other goals. And I was like, boom, I haven't even taken the first class yet. I just signed up. I'm probably going to hop on it after we finish this. But it was like, okay, cool. This says like 2 to 3 hours a week. You could finish it over 5 weeks. So I'll probably do like 6 hours a week maybe of it, so I could try to get it done in a week, week and a half. And it's just like, boom, now that I have this less time, once I'm done with this, I'm going to eat and hop on my work because there's less time in the day. And it's really productive, because a lot of times as creatives, we focus just on our creative aspect of our profession. And these things that are kind of business related, marketing related, success, like what does success mean to you? Like there's a whole list of classes that I really suggest you check out. But this is the time that you could really maximize taking that effort and being productive with this free time.
Absolutely. I mean, and you jumped on something that I kind of want to harken back onto. It's just the standpoint of like, you know, supply, demand, all this type of stuff. If you raise your prices, the demand goes lower and so forth. But then I'd also like try to get people to encourage, this is where strategy comes into play. That's why people give it a lot of lip service, but they don't actually put the time towards it. I just do a lot of thinking, you know, so I don't really, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, you're not really doing anything. It's like, no, I'm thinking. And it's kind of a lazy man's way, but sometimes a lazy man is an inventive one. Like they find systems, and I mean that in like, it can be male or female, of course. You find systems and you find strategies that allow you to do the job more efficiently, and it's creative in a way. So, I mean, Marie Kondo, which we just talked about a little bit ago, she calls herself lazy, you know, because she created systems that allowed her to not work that diligently on these things in cleaning up. So I would think about the response to that and be like, well, sure, it may drive the price or the demand lower. So how do you increase your value to the client so that you are now separated and you're elevated? Because yes, if you're right, if you're competing solely on price, then yes, you don't have the leverage. So how do you regain the leverage? And it's based off of like how you communicate your value to the client. So how do you do that? And so the whole point of this exercise is that you have to think creatively about it. Like, how would I articulate? What would be my differential advantage? And then two, how do I articulate that to the client? How do I prove that? And I can't answer that question for you. Everybody's going to have to think about that for themselves. The point being, now that you have time, think about these things. So yes, if everybody's competing on price and saying, okay, well, they're just doing a race to the bottom. Okay, we're going to do $100 day rates, $50 day rates, $20 day rates. At some point, you can't compete with that. So how do you compete and still get that job? Because you love to do that job. You love shooting sports or you love shooting journalism or whatever. How do you still do that, but also win the client? And so that is, even though you may be right, I'm trying to get people to engage their like mental muscles here. And this can only be done sometimes when you have time. When you're running around and you're doing work and you're doing jobs and you're balancing a family life where you're the captain of the ship and you just don't have time, you're burnt out, it's hard to strategize this way. So this is why I prioritize strategy or time, is because you can start to think about strategy. And I don't know if a lot of people think about that.
To kind of hop on that too, like to drop some knowledge of this recent class is like, think about, is the profession that you're in or the service that you're trying to provide, like, are you in a place where price really matters? You know, like if you're selling fish in a fish market, right? Like you have to sell that product that day because otherwise the fish is going to go bad. So you're kind of stuck in this, okay, this is the day rate or this is the rate of what people are doing or selling at this moment. So I kind of have to sell around that price range because they could go down the street and get someone else to do it. But if you're selling a product that, I mean, they use like pharmaceutical drugs where like somebody needs this insulin. I'm not saying this is right. It's kind of wrong, but like they will price gouge you because they know that you need this service because like you can't not have this drug. So kind of seeing where you are in this market or what service you have and like what do people need and what's like something that they could easily switch brands is very valuable in assessing like your own situation of your own business. And I hadn't thought about that until I took these classes of like kind of in my quote unquote free time, because 10 years ago, I would have never thought like that. But if you retake a subject where you're like, oh, like, yeah, I studied this in high school, and you retake that same subject, your life experience has changed and your perspective of the world has changed. And so you'll take away way more than you did 10 years ago.
Yeah. So I just like anything that allows you to, that challenges your normal conditions of thinking. So exactly. If it's okay, I'm rooted into this philosophy. This is what I believe in, or this is just what I've been trained to believe in and not even think about it. And then something challenges that. Now your wheels are going, and it's always good to have like an active mind. So I know people are using this time to use to take classes and everything and read books and watch YouTube videos, and that's all great. Give yourself that time and just, you know, when this ends, you know, when this quarantine ends, continually seek out ways to not only manufacture time, but manufacture time specifically so for your strategy, your business strategy, your, you know, everything about negotiation is creative to me. It's a collaboration, like, you know, and I run through scenarios. I run through pricing scenarios. Like, what if the client says this? What if the client does this? What's my response? You know, how am I going to articulate this? So to me, you don't want to be caught off guard by these things, because when the scenario happens, you don't have anything prepared and then you lose that leverage. So I am in no way an expert in that, but it's stuff that I value. So I value that time. I value that ability to challenge my brain by reading these books. If I read 10 finance books, I'm reading 10 others that hopefully have some sort of counter to those 10 ones that I read before, just so that I have like thought of as many scenarios and many different areas that I can think of to have as best I can mastered a subject matter that I used to have zero knowledge of before.
Yeah.
You know, it's just time management and how you use to elect how you elect to use that time are very important.
Yeah. And for me, kind of one of the last things I want to point out is like that you were talking about is like give yourself time to think, like non-distracted time. And us currently as humans are really not used to that, because the minute news cycle, having distractions on our phone all the time, always listening to music, like it's really tough to find time to just go out and think. You know, like I love going on walks because it slows everything down. You could look at the light, look at trees, whatever, and just it gives you time to think. Also, I've realized that I get distracted really easily. So I'll put on like lo-fi hip hop that doesn't have any lyrics. And that just kind of helps me think and get into the mood and allow my brain to cut out all the abstract noise pollution around my neighborhood, and just allows me to like, oh, listen to the beat. And then go on some weird abstract thought pattern and come out with something in the end.
Yeah, I do the same thing. And I also use these cubes that kind of have timers on them. It's kind of like an egg timer. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 45 minutes, those types of timers. And I just flip it anytime I want to do a sprint. So I call these sprints. And it's, to me, if you can avoid multitasking, that's the better way to go. Single task. And that's really going to allow you to focus on one thing until it's completed and just kill that off. So, and like you said, sometimes your mind will go different places. So that's why I do these sprints. I can't necessarily read in a hardcover book 3 hours straight, but I can do 45 minutes uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. And then I can take a break, and then I can do another one. And I can do that later and be like, oh, I want to do another 45 minute sprint. And so I'll do that. And so like, to me, those are areas of really optimizing how you're going to use your time, use these sprints, use those areas. There are two other areas that I wanted to mention. One, like, and I don't use this method, but I wanted to illuminate people to it, is that you can assign each day a job. You know, so this works for some people. You can make marketing your Monday, right? You can make your cold calls Tuesday. You can make your personal projects Wednesday, and so forth, right? You can do your bookkeeping on Thursday. If that helps you figure things out and clarify it, great. I don't personally use that, but that's just one area that I remember seeing an entrepreneur talk about, and I thought that's a great idea. It doesn't necessarily resonate with me. What resonates with me is what I'm going to kind of wrap up my part talking about, and it's going to take a little bit of time, hopefully not too much time, but it's going to take longer than it's actually going to take anybody to execute. So I'll just preface that.
Yeah.
It's called the Eisenhower Matrix. I've mentioned this before in a previous podcast episode. And this was brought up by Stephen R. Covey in the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. It's a great book. And it is a way to clarify what actions should be prioritized, what should be planned, what should be delegated, and what should be eliminated. So I have a few call to actions. So one for everybody, and I'm going to have you do this too, Robert, just like, I want you to write down the following sentence and fill in the blank. You can just fill in the blank. So okay. Here's the sentence. If only I could do blank, my business would go to the next level. End quote. Right. Okay. So I'll read that again. If only I could do blank, my business would go to the next level. And you can change this, you know, statement around a little bit. You could say, if only I were better at blank. And you can also change the word business to life. You know, it doesn't have to be business. But for this example, say, you know, business. Mm-hmm. So what this is asking you to do is honestly assess what you think you would be, what would be the biggest factor in for you taking your next step, whether mm-hmm. it's personal or professional. And I don't want to give you an example to influence your answer. Just write it down, put it aside. We'll come back to it.
Okay.
So next, I want everyone to draw a big box on a piece of paper. Now draw a big crosshair through the box. So you're going to split it into four equal quadrants or four small boxes. These boxes represent the way that we normally spend our time. So above the first column of boxes on the left-hand side, on the top, write the word urgent. Above the second column, write the words not urgent. And on the left-hand side of the diagram, next to the top of row of boxes, write the word important. And then next to row two, write not important. So once you do this, you can visualize it a lot easier. If you're listening to this on the road, it's a little bit challenging. Pause it, rewind it, play it again. So quadrant one, which is the top left box, is classified as activities that are both urgent and important. These involve things with clear deadlines and consequences for failing to execute. So examples of this would be sending in deliverables to your client, finalizing a contract, paying rent if it's due tomorrow, or picking up your kids from school, you know, filling the gas tank before you head to work. These are tasks that demand immediate action. They're time sensitive, borderlining on crisis mode. If you move on to quadrant two, which is that one on the top right, these are important but not urgent. These are activities that don't have any crisis level emergency to them, but you recognize them as impactful to your growth, your progress. Things like maybe networking, exercising, learning new skills, short and long-term projects. Those are areas that you want to put into quadrant two. On the lower hand side, quadrant three, the lower left box, those are tasks that are time sensitive, but not overly important. So this is a little bit more complicated to think about, but these are activities that are that don't really require specific skills to accomplish them. Sometimes they are, from a professional standpoint, I would call this busy work. Maybe it's checking your email threads, your text chains, answering phone calls, scheduling social media posts, acting on like limited time offers or sales. You know, that stuff is urgent, but not overly important. And then quadrant four, that's like the final box on the right, on the lower right. That's the easiest to comprehend because we all actively partake in it. These are activities that are neither urgent nor important. This is where we go down our YouTube rabbit holes, binging on Netflix or social media, and window shopping for like 2 hours on something that you really don't actually need. So I'm not saying that this is not an important quadrant. You know, decompressing, we've talked about escapism. Those are effective ways to recalibrate. But I think we can all agree that comparatively, that those activities are the least important to our development, especially in our business, right? Mm-hmm. So I mentioned that these boxes represent how we spend our time. We all partake in all of these quadrants. The question is, like, where do you spend the most of your amount of your time? And generally, we're going to weight certain quadrants more based on our jobs, our families, our personality types. And so what I want everybody to do is to go back to that first call of action and look at that answer that you filled in. So it was, if only I could do blank, or if I were only better at blank, my business would go to the next level. So Robert, what was your answer?
I'm actually going to hold off on this because I'm going to go and write this down and write this out.
Cool. No problem. So mine would be an example of marketing. It's kind of an area that I feel like I can get better at, significantly mm-hmm. better at. And the more I learn about it, the more I realize the importance of it. And especially, specifically in regards to client research, building email lists, print campaigns, networking, that falls into, that's my answer. Mm-hmm. And where you would put that would be quadrant two. Okay, so that's the kind of planning area. Mm-hmm. And for other people, maybe it's, you know, learning contracts or negotiating or getting better at lighting or understanding taxes. In my estimation, most people's answers are going to fall into quadrant two. And so I think the reason why this is important is to recognize that this is the quadrant of high achievers. So in the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, like Stephen R. Covey discusses these case studies and the research they showed where that the highest achievers lived in quadrant two. They emphasized the activities in quadrant two, and they found that they actually decreased the pressing problems that might pop in quadrant one, and then they delegated the activities in quadrant three, and then they aggressively audited and killed off the amount of time spent in quadrant four. So whether you use this diagram is like no consequence to me, really. It's just more to illustrate that you guys have mentioned this yourself. If you're answering the questions, I didn't tell you what to write down and fill in. But if your answer is in quadrant two, which I believe it probably is going to be, then you know that you can kill off areas in quadrant four, quadrant three, if you can try to delegate, and focus in on quadrant two, because that's really where they're going to be the biggest amount of growth and progress is going to be. And that's kind of like the wrap up there. I mean, like, so to me, why I believe it's important is that your belief system is congruent with your actions. Mm-hmm. So if you believe, okay, well, the best thing that for me to get to the next level is marketing, like my example, and I don't spend any time on marketing, then I've created a conflict. This is where people get frustrated. This is where people waste their time, and most importantly, their talents, is that they believe in one thing and they don't do it. That's like, to me, that's the biggest crime. So you want to create this kind of alignment here of like, you fill in the answer, you fill in the blanks. You could say anything, whatever your answer is, even if it has nothing to do with business, and you said, I want to be better at, you know, so-and-so to live a more fulfilling life. If you know what the answer is, and it happens to be in that quadrant two section, and you don't do it, that to me is just creating more conflict, more frustration, and you waste a lot of time and energy. So do what you can to focus in on that area, and you will see tremendous amount of growth. And if you can do that, it's not a waste of time. We tend to see it as like a quadrant of, I'll just put it off until later. You know, I can do that anytime. Yeah. And that's true. It's not urgent. You're not going to get fired if you don't, you know, research taxes. But if you know, if you're identifying, this is the thing. If I get better here, I'm going to be the best version of my professional self as possible, then why aren't you doing it? That's the only thing I know it's a very long-winded way to go about this, but this is the personal strategy that I use. It's easy for me to visualize, and it takes me significantly less time than it took me to explain it. It takes me a minute to draw this diagram out in the morning and set it up. So just food for thought. It's the Eisenhower Matrix method. You can search for this online and figure it out and just jot it down. And I think you'll find that to be helpful for achieving whatever goals you might have.
No, definitely. I'm looking forward to doing this. Because when you first asked me this question, I did write down what the first thing that popped into my mind was. So I do want to give a little bit of time on what the four quadrants are for this particular answer that I have. And killing two birds with one stone and being productive with my time. I'm going to write this out and put this up on media1099.com because that was one of my quarterly goals, to write more. And this is a great example for me to be proactive in that field. And also, I think it's really interesting the first thing that pops into your head, right? Because normally, like, your gut is pretty right, I feel like, in these situations, mm-hmm. you know, so like it, what I wrote down, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, then that's probably true. And like you said, I think it's a little bit hard to articulate, but yeah. I think you did a great job of breaking this down. So I'm looking forward to really putting this to test with my additional quote unquote free time that I could use to polish up my skills.
Yeah. And I hope it wasn't too long winded. I know it was, but you know, if you're going to identify what your goal is just by answering the question. So it's not influenced by me. I mean, I kind of led the question a certain way, but like, you know, it's simple as like, you know, what would take me to the next level? If you answer that, then like, you know, then you know everything should be aligned with that. Like, that's where your action should be focused on. I'm not saying don't watch Netflix. You know, like I clearly watch Netflix. But you know, you identify my last things is if you have this time and you assume that, okay, we've got 3 more weeks or 4 more weeks of this quarantine, like make the most out of it, like and get something. It doesn't have to be a professional thing, although I think that can help. It can be a personal thing. Like my wife just taught me my first lesson on how to drive stick right before we jumped onto this podcast. And that's something that we've always said, like, hey, you know, you should learn how to drive stick. I'm like, yeah, I guess I should. Now it's like, cool. Like by the end of this, I hope to be pretty proficient at it. You know, like it's pretty exciting. So, you know, use this time to, for whatever it is, if you want to be a better person, a better father or wife or whatever, or worker, you know, you jot these things down and you can create multiple answers and put your energy towards that. I think you will have now defined what success is for your time.
Yeah, I just got to give you a little bit of grief. You don't know how to drive stick shift? Come on, man. I'm a millennial and I know how to do that.
Well, why would I? if you don't have a car that is a manual car, why would you learn how to drive it?
Zombie apocalypse, dude.
I suppose.
You gotta be ready to go.
I'm just saying, like, you know, why put your energy into something that you wouldn't have the opportunity to use?
Yeah. No,
so,
I mean,
so to me, it's like, it was pretty logical of like, there's no reason to learn it. Like, I mean, sure, I'd like to learn it, but if I don't have the opportunity to actually drive a car, unless I ask somebody else's to like borrow the car, it made no sense. But yeah, that's fine. I'll take the grief.
All right. I think that's a good spot for us to wrap it up today. If you guys have enjoyed the show, help us out by hitting that like or subscribe button of your favorite podcasting service. It really helps grow our channel. Also, hit us up on Instagram at Media1099Podcast or on Twitter at Media1099 with your answer to what the blank was for you. I think this will be a great opportunity to see what everybody's thinking. Also, don't forget to check out our awesome website, Media1099.com, for the latest blog posts, podcast episodes. You can see where I'm going to write what my answer was and what my quadrants are. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. It's been a pleasure. We will catch you on the next podcast.